Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. I'm Naomi Fowler. Coming up later, a new offshore scandal, the Paradise Papers.
The Paradise Papers shows us that the problem is not one law firm like Mossack Fonseca, but that the problem is the whole industry.
We talk to Frederick Obermeyer, one of the journalists who got the scoop. 13.4 million files this time from blue-chip British law firm Appleby. Antisocial offshore behaviour from more than 120 politicians and world leaders, including the British Queen, and 13 major donors, associates and members of US President Trump's administration. Also revealed the tax minimisation practices of more than 100 multinational corporations. We ask, what now for tax justice? But first, here's a quick roundup of tax justice news this month. After investigative journalist Daphne Caruana Galizia was killed by a car bomb in Malta last month, eight of the world's largest news organisations have called on the European Commission to investigate her murder and the independence of the media in Malta. Her family's just filed a lawsuit against the Maltese police. Under the European law on human rights, states are obliged to run independent and objective investigations into all murders. The family says the investigation is neither of those things. All Big Four accountancy firms have been fined €23 million between them by Italy's antitrust authority for what it describes as one of the most serious infringements of competition law. And also in Italy, the parliament there has approved a new law protecting whistleblowers reporting wrongdoing in the public and private sector. It's not perfect, but now it means Italy's become only the eighth country in the European Union to adopt more or less full protection. However, the European Parliament's just adopted a resolution that proposes some major steps towards protection. And if we needed a reminder on why such laws are needed, the LuxLeaks whistleblowers Antoine Deltour and Raphael Alley are back in court in Luxembourg, appealing their fines and suspended sentences a second time. We owe them a huge debt of gratitude for their public service. We'll report back on the judgment. Those are all the headlines we've got time for. Now we're going to talk to John Christensen at the Tax Justice Network for his take on the Paradise Papers. OK, John, there's one big story that we have to talk about this month, the Paradise Papers, another leak.
What else?
Or as Appleby might prefer to put it, we've not been the subject of a leak, but of a serious criminal act. And the journalists are the ones that should be in jail. Never mind public interest. Anyway, let's look at the differences, first of all, between the Panama Papers and the Paradise Papers. I mean, while the Panama Papers ripped apart all the sorts of dodgy dealings that were going on, and a lawyer at Mossack Fonseca wrote at the time, 95% of our work is selling vehicles to avoid paying taxes. And obviously, it was easier back then for tax haven defenders to say, well, this was just one dodgy company, and, well, it is in Latin America after all. And that obviously ignores the fact that, as we've always said, the Panama Papers could just as easily have been called the British Virgin Islands Papers because it was such a favourite of Mossack Fonseca. The Argentinian economist Juan Valerdi made a really interesting point, I thought, when he described the Panama Papers as the McDonald's of offshore in comparison with the Paradise Papers. And it was quite an interesting point. I suppose we could say the Paradise Papers is a bit like dining at the Savoy in the sense that it does strike at the heart of the offshore beast in terms of highlighting the really central role of the UK and the United States at the very highest levels. So it's quite illuminating in that sense, in a different sense.
Yes, because as you say, there was a tendency to dismiss the Panama Papers as a case of one bad apple in a whole barrel of otherwise good law firms. And that's the first point we should explore. Secondly, we had many, many commentators coming out in the international press from the tax haven side saying that the Panama Papers revealed actually very few instances of illegality. Much of what was revealed was perfectly legal, which actually says something about how duff the laws are. And thirdly, we have to ask ourselves, what does this leak reveal about the relations between offshore magic circle law firms like Appleby, which, as you say, are totally blue chip, the, you know, the Savoy end of the dining spectrum, and how they penetrated the politics of the world's largest governments, United States, UK and so on, the big tax havens out there. So if we start with this single bad apple argument, At the time of the Panama Papers, we argued that the law firm involved, Mossack Fonseca, was undoubtedly not unique. Now, because it was Panama-based, there was a lot of people who rolled their eyes and thought, what do you expect from Panama? But that leak revealed that the largest number of companies, as you've already said, weren't located in Panama. They were actually located in blue-chip British Virgin Islands and not Panama. Now, this time round, the leak, or rather it was a hack apparently, comes from a really blue-chip British law firm. And the clients range from people like Irish crooner Mr. Bono to the Queen, and from mining giant Glencore to the largest apple of them all. This is top drawer stuff, as they would say in Britain. Now, at the height of the media frenzy early this month, commentators were rushing to the studios to downplay the whole Paradise Papers thing. There's no proof of evasion, they spinned, and the tax avoidance is perfectly legal. They have no right to make that claim, since, as we've said time and time again, only the courts have the authority to determine the legality of an avoidance scheme, and many are subsequently found where they're taken to court to be illegal. My guess is that once the investigations of the papers get seriously underway, many of the supposedly legal schemes will be struck down by court decisions. Now, finally, this is a really embarrassing hack for Applebee's, the law firm, and for the British government, because the hack papers reveal that the International Financial Centres Forum, that's a tax haven lobby, which Appleby, the law firm, is prominently engaged in, boasts of its influential penetration at the very highest level of the UK government, at ministerial level, at senior civil servant level, particularly in the run-up to the G8 summit in Lockerne, which is the summit where they were talking about strengthening transparency, improving international cooperation. These people, these lawyers, are boasting about the fact they managed to penetrate the UK government, which of course hosted the Lockerne summit, and had been able to resist key transparency measures, which it said Applebee says these measures would be too expensive and unnecessary. And it also boasted that its behind-the-scenes lobbying blocked attempts by world leaders to agree on a wide range of transparency measures. Now, you and I, and most people, I think, would see this as lawyers using their influence in a corrupt way to block measures to tackle tax havens. It smells.
Yeah, with some of the exchanges that we saw in the Paradise Papers between the lobbyists and all the boasting that you just mentioned, just sort of summarises everything we've been talking about on the TaxCast for the last 6 years, you know.
Absolutely. Applebee, of course, have history here because in the past we picked up on the way in which they boast to their clients that their senior partners have entered the legislatures of tax havens. These are lawyers who boast of the fact that not only are they able to penetrate the state, they actually get elected into the state itself to shape the laws on behalf of their clients. And I think this gets to the heart of why Paradise Papers are so different from Panama Papers, because it shows a blue chip law firm which is really quite aggressive about its political machinations to shape the global tax haven economy.
Right, and when it comes to the anti-democratic elements to all this, there was a very interesting exchange when it comes to Apple, which relocated after LuxLeaks and the way that they were exposed for their double Irish tax manoeuvre. They started looking elsewhere, and the way that they actually went about doing that was quite interesting.
Yeah, indeed. Very interesting indeed. And this is perhaps one of the most interesting stories, the most revealing story to come out of the Paradise Papers, because it might explain the mystery of what Apple did after the Irish government was forced in 2013-2014 to start rolling back against the so-called double Irish. Now, according to the Paradise Papers, Apple's tax lawyers started to hunt around for a totally different tax haven to replace Ireland, where they could set up a new subsidiary which would allow the tax dodging to continue. And the leaked documents show that Apple was clearly on the lookout for a tax haven that was both secretive and deficient in democratic accountability. Now, here are the criteria used by Apple's lawyers in trying to identify where they could relocate. First of all, they said, What information is made publicly visible through the company registry or equivalent when a company is registered in your jurisdiction? So they're asking the governments of these tax havens, what information do you make public? Do you want made public? Because they did not want to have any information about themselves made public. Second question is it possible to obtain an official assurance of tax exemption? And if so, what is involved in obtaining it, including costs? How long does that assurance last? In other words, we want a deal, we want it to be secret, and we want it to last a long time. Then, next question, are there any developments suggesting that the law may change in an unfavourable way in the foreseeable future? In other words, what happens if a left-leaning government comes in and strikes down the deal done by the previous one? And worst of all, is there a credible opposition party or movement that may replace the current government? In other words, is this a functional democracy which might decide to overturn the dodgy deals done between multinational companies and the current government? So there we have it, straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak, leaked out of the Paradise Papers thing. And sadly for me, because of course I am a Jerseyman, they chose the British Channel Island of Jersey, which doesn't have a public register of company ownership, which doesn't have a corporate income tax. The income tax rate on corporate profits is zero, and which has been operating as a tax haven for over half a century. Crucially, in Jersey, they don't have functional party politics, and they don't have a formalised democratic opposition. So they seem to meet all of Apple's criteria for a low tax or zero tax jurisdiction without a democratic opposition. Just perfect for a company like Apple, which holds much of its non-US earnings in currently $252 billion cash mountain just sitting offshore. Now, Jersey, of course, denies that it's a tax haven, which no one believes. But these revelations are embarrassing since they highlight that the priority Apple gave to secrecy, to political pliability, when they decided to move from Ireland to Jersey as a location for their tax dodging.
Right, and we've also got an interesting example in the Isle of Man of similar kind of behaviour asking about democratic opposition. And the answer saying, yeah, we do have, but their influence is minimal.
Another revelation coming out of the Paradise Papers. These are places where the lawmakers will adjust the laws or adopt laws to suit the needs of wealthy clients who can afford to pay for laws. At the heart of this case, which was covered by a BBC programme, is a Swiss-based tax lawyer called Mark Morris. Now, Morris devised a scheme involving transfer of Swiss bank deposits into redeemable insurance policies that would be issued to international clients via an Isle of Man structure called Minerva Assurance. The purpose of the scheme was to enable wealthy clients to get around the information exchange provisions of the European Union's Savings Directive, which is intended, of course, to tackle tax evasion. Now, in order to make his scheme work, Morris needed some new regulations from the Isle of Man government. So lawyers, acting on his behalf, approached the relevant authority in Douglas, that's the capital of the Isle of Man, and in this case, they approached a certain David Vick of the Government Insurance and Pension Regulatory Authority and suggested some ideas for tweaking the law to accommodate the Morris scheme. Now, Mr. Vick obligingly emailed back to suggest a consultation process. And hey presto, Mark Morris got his law amendment, which went through the island's parliament in May 2005, just days before the European Union Savings Directive came into effect. But I'd suggest that this little example is just one of the many cases where tax haven governments are found to be leaning over backwards to help wealthy elites to dodge paying taxes.
Right, and it brings us back once again to this race to the bottom going on between different jurisdictions and the complete failure, really, of the OECD to put in place legislation that will tackle this.
Yeah, but we have a real problem globally with this race to the bottom because many small islands, we've heard about Jersey, we've heard about Bermuda here, we've heard about Isle of Man, these places lack viable development strategies, partly because of a lack of political imagination, and all they can do is engage one against the other, competing for these big international clients, and all the clients want are lower taxes or no taxes possibly even subsidy and lower regulations. So we're in a downward spiral now globally. It's a global problem. And sadly, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development is bereft of ideas because so many of these jurisdictions are British or USA key players within the OECD. And that's why in response to the Paradise Papers, the Tax Justice Network say, look, we need to push this up to a higher level. We need to go beyond the OECD, right the way up to the United Nations. We need a United Nations summit meeting, something like the Rio Summit on Climate Change, which will address these issues in a globally democratic arrangement and then lay out a path for how we can implement global measures for once and for all to put this tax haven menace to bed.
John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. This month, we speak to Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist Frederick Obermeier of the newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung and the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. He was one of the journalists who got the Panama Papers scoop, and now the scoop on the Paradise Papers. Hi, Frederick. Great to have you on the TaxCast again.
Hey, Naomi. Hi.
Perhaps I can start with what many of the tax haven defenders and the people that work in that industry's reaction has been to the Paradise Papers. According to them, this is stolen data and you journalists should be in prison.
Well, first of all, Süddeutsche Zeitung is not commenting on its sources. We, as our German newspaper, receive the data on a legal way. And we examine it due to our journalistic standards. So that is what I would respond to those critics. We do see an immense public interest in this case. We went over the data with our lawyers, asking ourselves dozens of times, is it enough? And we were 100% convinced that there is such a high public interest given here. Because what we do see here is, of course, not only illegal behavior. We see legal behavior or behavior that is on the edge. And we always have to state very clearly, if somebody claims this is legal, we can only basically suggest or suspect that it's legal, but we do not know until a judge basically decides on such a case. So I think that is something our readers should always keep in mind and everybody should keep in mind when the industry tries to defend itself in that way.
Absolutely. This is what the whole secrecy element is about as well, is that some people within the enabler industry are knowingly sailing close to the edge. And perhaps also they're not expecting that it was ever going to come to the light of day to be tested in a court of law. Interesting that the Paradise Papers seem to have struck deeper than the Panama Papers did into the heart of the US and the UK's role in this global industry, right at the highest levels.
Well, I mean, when we did the Panama Papers, we were, of course, well aware that the US is one of the biggest secrecy jurisdictions in the world. If we look in tax havens like Nevada, like Delaware, like Wyoming, that's a big issue. And if we look on the UK, the overseas territories, this is a big problem. But in the Panama Papers, there were thousands of US citizens in the data, but not that high profile like we now found them in the Paradise Papers with names like Wilbur Ross. So, of course, the Paradise Papers shed light more on those parts of the problem that were not extensively covered by the Panama Papers.
And from a journalistic point of view, with Mossack Fonseca's data in the Panama Papers, things were kept very tidily in folders. But there was a lot more detective work needed with the Paradise Papers and its multiple sources.
Yeah, I mean, the Panama Papers were retrospectively, I mean, at that moment, I was not of that opinion, but they were easier to investigate because this law firm, they had a very good order, an internal order. So they had for each company, they had one folder, or sometimes it was two or three, but not more. So if you went through all the documents, you basically had the chronology of an offshore company. But now with the new data that came actually from several sources, because it was the offshore provider called Appleby, it was Asia City Trust, and then it was the company registries of 19 tax havens. This was, of course, more difficult and more complex. But at the same time, it opened the window in this secrecy world to such a huge extent. I mean, we now, only by this company registries, we had the chance actually to look into around about a fifth of all secrecy jurisdictions worldwide and see what was going on there. So even as it was more complicated to investigate, I think we did see more, because in the Panama Papers, it was one company. And it was one that already was like the black sheep within the industry. But now we have companies that were considered the good ones, like Applebee, part of the offshore magic circle. And now seeing that they actually did similar shady business shows us that the problem is not one law firm like Mossack Fonseca, but that the problem is the whole industry.
Absolutely. What was the reaction when you contacted some of the people, the parties involved in some of these stories, to give them right of reply?
Well, we have seen all different kinds of reaction. There was this reaction like, you got me. There was a reaction like, well, let's sit down, I can explain everything to you. And then there was, of course, those that did not even reply, or that did reply with long legal letters explaining us why it would not be good to report these stories. And actually, in between the lines, threatening us to sue us. And some of them even told us that a lawsuit would cost our newspaper lots of money, so that we should be aware of that one. But that's something, as long as we are sure that we have the story right, this will not stop us. Such legal threats will not stop us. I personally feel even more encouraged to publish them, because it is important that if a journalist found wrongdoing, double-checked it, is convinced that the story is true and of public relevance, it is important that we do not shy away from publishing them only because there's a very famous law firm on the other side threatening us to go to court.
Right. And some of the jurisdictions that have been most exposed by the Paradise Papers have been kind of presenting this expose as a political manoeuvre, their words, a political manoeuvre ahead of the European Union's black list of non-cooperative jurisdictions, which is due out very soon, next month, in fact. They all seem to be really worried about that.
Yeah, I mean, we hear that argument very often. We also heard it after the Panama Papers, that this would be a political maneuver. But I can only state it as loud and clearly as possible. We are journalists. We are not activists. What we do is we uncover things. And then it's up to our listeners, to our readers, to the viewers of the TV programs, to then make their own decision what they think. And if those jurisdictions think that this is a political maneuver, I mean, that's only them trying to push away critics and delegitimize critics. But we do see since years that there is a problem. But what we also do see is that there is no real fight against this problem. And of course, it must be annoying for politicians if there's always new investigations, that it's not only NGOs criticizing or the Tax Justice Network pointing a finger on the weak spots in the system, but that it's always journalists doing their investigations, publishing them, and keeping a debate ongoing and making things public that should be public.
Yes, and definitely one of the impacts of the Paradise Papers must be that there's really a lot more pressure now on the European Union to produce a serious tax haven blacklist with serious sanctions for non-cooperative jurisdictions. That'll be interesting to see what they do on that next month and elsewhere, although in the United States I don't think there's much hope of seeing any action given the Trump administration.
Yeah, I mean, we will of course listen to what politicians say now and what they demand now and what they promise now. In half a year, in a year, we will look back what has changed, and we will make public what has changed and what has not changed. After there have been so many leaks now, and after each leak you hear the same voices. It's like, well, this is only one bank or only one offshore service provider, but it's not the whole industry. But I mean, who believes that still? You can only understand that this is a huge global problem, and that therefore there needs to be a huge global solution. But if we look on the European Union, politicians still struggle to call Malta, to call Ireland, to call the Netherlands what they are. and they are tax havens. And if they don't name them like that, that's a problem, because it's not telling the public and the voters the truth.
Yeah, it's interesting. The former head of the Bermuda government's predicted that Appleby won't survive after the Paradise Papers, much like Mossack Fonseca went down after the Panama Papers. But we want much more than that, right? Because this is a systemic problem. I'm also wondering, with a lot of the focus that tends to go on to the well-known sports personalities, pop stars, the Queen, you know, Donald Trump's associates, has the role of the big four accountancy firms had enough of a light shone on it, do you think? I mean, they just always seem to manage to slink into the shadows.
I think there cannot be enough light shone on the big four, because we do see them in actually every league coming up. We do see their role. We do see that they are the big enablers. But at the same time, we do see that they know what to put on paper and what not to put on paper. And I do not reveal too much that, of course, their role is something that we still have a close look in the Paradise Papers. And that's something which we, as our newspaper, Süddeutsche Zeitung, will, of course, try to cover in the future as well, because their role is a crucial one. They are the ones, on the one hand side, consulting governments and being paid, that's the important point, by governments. And on the other hand side, they're helping their customers to use loopholes that they possibly help to set up while working for a government. And I think that's a problem, and that's something the public should know.
Right. I was wondering, what's been the most important story for you in the Paradise Papers so far?
Well, actually, for me, the most difficult, but I think very important story was our story on Glencore, the Swiss commodity trader, and Glencore's activities in the Democratic Republic of Congo, their business relationship to Dan Gertler, a dubious Israeli businessman who turns up in many, many cases when it goes to shady business deals. And I think that's, for me personally, a very important case, because we have to be aware that it is intransparent companies helping to basically plunder the African continent. So if, like, the UN or the EU want to help the African continent, bringing more transparency into tax havens, forcing tax havens to more transparency is a first step, because we see how many billions of dollars are funneled out of Africa every year by the use of offshore companies. And I think the European Union, Western countries, would not need to pay aid to the African continent, because I think it would be a first step and bring by far more money to these countries by fighting for transparency in regards to company structures.
It's still early days, isn't it, with the Paradise Papers? I mean, I'm sure there's plenty more stories to come out.
There are still stories to come. We are around about 100 media outlets all around the world that are still working on the Paradise Papers. And those investigations are not that easy. They take weeks and months. We are now actually working on the stories that we had to put aside due to lack of staff, for example, lack of time. And that's stories we now take out again, have a second look, and try to go through the documents and investigate the stories and publish them. And I think the Panama Papers were a good example of what you can expect and what the public can expect, because just a week before the publication of the Paradise Papers, and that was 1.5 years after the Panama Papers, we still had new partners, for example, media outlets in Bolivia, publishing their first stories. And we will decide on bringing new partners to this project, giving new media outlets access to the data to enable new investigations and important investigations. I'm proud to see that we have shown the world another time that journalists, no matter how hard the competition is in media, are still able to work together to collaborate on stories that are important for the world.
We've been speaking to Frederik Obermeyer of Süddeutsche Zeitung. You can follow the latest on the Paradise Papers on Süddeutsche Zeitung's website, on the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists site, or or the Tax Justice Network's site for comment and analysis. I hope, by the way, when you do search online, you'll not be using Google, but www.quant.com, that's Q-W-A-N-T, or www.ecosia.org, there's others as well. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next month.